PHI Files, the ultimate Eagles podcast with Nate Lundy.
Let's get to the Eagles with Joe Giglio from WIP in Philadelphia. You can find him on Twitter at Joe Giglio Sports. That's G-I-G-L-I-O. Joe, let's start here. The Eagles parting ways with Sam Bradford. Your take on the trade.
I was shocked when it happened. I was actually on the air on Saturday morning here in Philadelphia when the trade went down. And, you know, some tweets started coming in. We started getting some feeling like something was happening right at the beginning of the show, 10 a.m. Eastern on Saturday. And then about a half hour later, things became final. Shocked just because, you know, we're a week out before the season. And this is just this. I think what the Eagles got back made it palatable for them and made it to the point where they could not pass it up. But initial reaction was just a shock that they would trade away the starting quarterback a week before the season.
At the same time, though, I've got to feel like if you're going to make that kind of a trade, the Eagles have got to feel pretty good about what they got in return. We can talk about the quarterback position in a minute, but to trade them away and actually get a first and then a fourth that obviously has some conditions to it isn't too bad.
No, I think it's great. And I don't think they could have gotten any more any other time with any other team. I think this was the perfect storm with Vikings desperate moving into a new stadium. Last year, a kick away from going to the divisional round, having Adrian Peterson in his early 30s. I just feel like they were very desperate. The Eagles smelled blood of the water. They took advantage of it. And I feel like even if Bradford played well this year, the destination was him not in Philadelphia next year. They would have looked to trade him in the offseason. And really, I thought a third-round pick, a second maybe, would have been the ceiling there, even if Bradford had a really good year. They cashed in, and we'll get to it, I think they really took away from what they gave away to go up in the draft last year to get Carson Wentz, because you add what they got back in this deal, and what they traded away in April doesn't look so bad now.
When you look at the trade, obviously what it means, as you just said, is that you're going away from your starting quarterback. That means Carson Wentz. There are some on the outside that have said, Joe, that this almost looks like the Eagles have sort of punted the 2016 season. What would your response be to that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel that way in a sense, too. I mean, there is a big unknown around Carson Wentz, and not just because he went to a small school where, you know, a lot of us really didn't get to watch him play in college, but this preseason he was hurt. I mean, he played in the first game, played from right about halftime until about 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and he broke a rib. And we have not seen him in game action since. So there's the college unknown. There's the unknown just in preseason. So you could make that point where maybe they have punted the season, because who knows if this guy can play or he's ready to play. They seem to be spinning that he's ready, that he really has impressed them since OTA, since he got into the building, and that they think they can go out there and win with him right now. And look, there have been quarterbacks, young ones, rookie ones, that have done it in recent past. So the idea isn't unprecedented, but I can't totally disagree that they probably have punted away their best chance to maybe sneak in the playoffs this year.
As you look then at this team, let's talk about the offense that's going to be around him, because anytime you've got a rookie that's being thrown in like that, you know that they've got to be able to lean on some guys. So let's talk about the offense that's there. You know, who do you think he has the ability to use as a safety blanket to try to take some of the pressure off of him when they step out on the field?
I think the tight ends are the best part of this team. There's some intriguing wide receivers, some young guys. Really one of the youngest wide receiving cores we've seen in the NFL in, maybe 10, 15 years. And I don't think there's anyone over the age of 24, 25. So there's some talent there. First-round pick in Nelson Agholor last year. They just traded for Dorial Green-Beckham. There's talent there, but really unknown. But I think the tight end position is where they're going to lean. I look back at what the Chiefs did last year, which you guys know about very well, and Doug Peterson coming over, being the offensive coordinator of that team. You know, they rely on their tight ends a lot. Threw a lot of three tight end sets with Travis Kelce. And I think the Eagles will do the same. Zach Ertz could have a really big year. They have Trey Burton, who's kind of an unknown, but I think he's going to catch a lot of passes as a second tight end. And the veteran Brent Celek. So I think the tight end will be the best friend this year to the young Carson Wentz.
Talking with Joe Giglio from WIP in Philadelphia, talking about the Eagles. You know, you brought up the name Dorial Green-Beckham. That trade I found kind of interesting, the way that Tennessee sort of gave up on him. How's he been received in Philly?
So far, so good. And he seems eager to learn. He seems to be trying to go against maybe the reputation that he developed at Tennessee. I mean, look, the problem in Tennessee seems to be some sort of combination of work ethic and slash the inability to learn and grasp the playbook. As far as all those off-the-field concerns that knocked him probably out of the first round of the draft a few years ago, He seems to be a pretty good citizen in Tennessee. He's been that for a few weeks here. So those concerns, for now at least, don't seem to be there. But I think people are excited. I mean, he's a 6'5 wide receiver, and you watch him, and it's hard not to at least just aesthetically think and remember Plaxico Burress. That's who he reminds me of. Now, I don't know if he could be half player Plaxico Burress was, but he certainly has that kind of build and frame and leaping ability to go up and get a high pass and bring it in for a touchdown. So people are excited about, you know, the kind of talent they brought in. Really, like you said, the trade. I mean, they traded a backup offensive lineman for a kid that has a lot of talent. It seemed like a win to me.
As you look at the team, you talked a little bit earlier about Doug Peterson. You know, what's been your opinion of him taking over as the head coach of the team?
Well, I think it's evolved. When they first hired him, I was very skeptical. The Eagles have been accused, and I don't know if it's a bad thing, but accused here of doing everything they can to try to recreate the Andy Reid era, which ironically they ushered out after a lot of success. About 4 years ago, but you know, Doug Peterson was a big part of that. Doug didn't seem to have a lot of interest around the NFL besides the Eagles as a head coaching candidate, so there was concern, you know, why this guy? And again, that was the same kind of story with Andy Reid in 1999. That worked out pretty well for a very long time, but he's impressed me with his play calling, the way he's gotten guys involved. I think he's going to use this roster well, and I think he's a good offensive mind. As far as the game management, all that stuff, we're going to start finding out on Sunday. Doug doesn't come across as the brightest guy in the room in terms of a press conference. He kind of stumbles over his words sometimes. I think we make too much of that, you know, sometimes on a slow day, but it's all about how he coaches in the field. And for that, so far, so good.
When you look at the start of the season, Joe, and you look at the schedule, do you feel like maybe the scheduling gods gave you a little bit of a gift? Obviously, a home game against the Browns, but then going on the road against the Bears, and the Bears just have not looked good so far in the preseason. Is it possible that this team, you know, as many question marks as they have, could be sitting 1-1 or maybe even 2-0?
They could, and the schedule is definitely their friend. I think it's the key to the season. If they're going to compete, if they're going to surprise, it's going to have to come early. You mentioned the Browns at home week one, at Chicago on a Monday night week two. It's certainly a winnable game, even though it'll be Wentz's first road start in the NFL. They come home for Pittsburgh, and they have a very early bye before going to Detroit. I mean, these outside of Pittsburgh, all those other three, to me, are very winnable games with the bye mixed in to help, I think, expand the offense and bring Wentz along with a chance to kind of reset in 3 weeks and feed him some more of the offense. So this is a good chance for them to get off a good start. If they don't, though, if they start, you know, 1-2, 1-3, it could be a very long year because they have the first three division games are on the road, and they have difficult trips to Seattle, a trip to Cincinnati, a home game against Green Bay in November. So it's all about right now. If they get off to a good start, it could be a fun year. If not, it's going to be a long one.
We know there's some concerns on this defense, Joe, but where are the bright spots on the Eagles' defense?
The defensive line, it's been spectacular is the only word I could use in the preseason. And it's only preseason, and you don't want to get carried away, but a lot of these guys they have, Fletcher Cox at defensive tackle, Vinny Curry at defense end, they've had a lot of money despite small production over the last couple of years because he just wasn't in the right scheme. They were drafted years ago to play in the scheme they're playing now. They went away with it with Chip Kelly and the scheme he liked to play for his defense. They're back to it now, the 4-3, the wide nine. They're going to get after the quarterback. They really are going to get a lot of sacks, and that's the key to everything because their corners, to me, are average at best, and they're going to go up against a lot of great receivers this year. They have good safeties. The linebacking core is a question mark, but if that defensive line led by Fletcher Cox in the middle, if they get to the quarterback, the defense is going to be pretty good. If they don't, they're going to give up a lot of big plays.
Other than the obvious of quarterback, last one for you, Joe. When you watch the game this weekend against the Browns, what's a specific part of the game you're going to be watching with this Eagles team?
I'm going to be looking to see if their defense can cause turnovers. I mentioned the pass rush, and I think it's going to be present. But I think in order to surprise, in order to maybe be a little better than people are projecting, I think the Eagles have to create turnovers, win the turnover battle basically on a week-in, week-out basis, and be opportunistic. We've seen a lot of that in the preseason. I think the first couple of games they had eight or nine turnovers they caused. And you can't, you know, move that forward and think it'll happen in the regular season. But you kind of saw the formula, the pressure from up front, the quarterback's pressure, he throws the ball into traffic, and the Eagles made plays on it in those few preseason games. If they could take that over and bring it to the regular season, I think that could change things because I just don't think the offense with the rookie is built to, you know, score 24 a game by themselves. But if they get short field, if the defense scores a couple points on their own, you know, things could change.
Joe Giglio's been our guest, WIP Radio in Philadelphia. You follow him on Twitter at Joe Giglio Sports, at G-I-G-L-I-O. Joe, really appreciate the time. Thanks for visiting with us on the podcast.
Anytime.
Coming up next, the coach, Brian Billick. Stick around.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that every week here on the NFL Files with the coach, Brian Billick. You follow him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, we are here at week one, and as I was making my notes getting ready to chat this week, I realized that we are sitting on a whole lot of quarterback news. So let's start with the trade. Your thoughts on Sam Bradford going to Minnesota?
I think it's a great move. I think it mainly is an indicator that shows you just how good Minnesota thinks they are. A lot of people coming in, including myself, thought they could be not only a playoff team as they were last year, but a Super Bowl contender. And I think Sam Bradford actually enhances that. It's tragic to lose Teddy Bridgewater the way they did, but they were still betting on Teddy Bridgewater to come a little bit. You know, he only had 14 touchdowns last year, and I think he was going to get there. I think Sam Bradford in this system, and I think that's an important part for his ability to turn around and hand the ball up to Adrian Peterson, make the big throws down the field, for them to play good defense. I think it's a great move for them.
And looking at what the Eagles then did, for some on the outside, Coach, it almost feels like the Eagles have said, okay, this is our season, maybe this isn't our season, but they're putting a lot of faith in Carson Wentz, who only took 39 snaps in the preseason. Are you surprised?
Not really. I am an IA, and I'm not, from the standpoint of anytime you take quarterback in first round, you got to play that guy. I mean, otherwise, I was up at Philadelphia's training camp, and they seemed fully committed to not playing Carson Wentz if that's the way it came down. Remember, Doug Peterson was one who came in 1999 with the Philadelphia Eagles for Andy Reid to basically be a placeholder for Donovan McNabb, and he did that. Now, that was a 5-11 football team. And Don McNabb eventually took over. I'm a little surprised that they went to Carson Wentz this early, although the opportunity to turn Sam Bradford, I was critical of Philadelphia when they signed Sam Bradford and wondered what they were doing, then moved up to get the first round. But for them to recoup a first-round pick for Sam Bradford, I think they've been brilliant.
Yeah, I think overall when you look at that story, it worked out well for the Eagles. I knew that Minnesota was sitting on some extra picks, but obviously getting a first-rounder back was a big deal. Now let's go down to Dallas, Coach, where Dak Prescott will have the reins because of the injury to Tony Romo. You've had a chance to see him in the preseason. We know that all around the Metroplex, they're basically ready to put him in the Hall of Fame. They love him so much. But what have you seen from Dak Prescott that you think is going to be successful for him, and what do you still have concerns about?
Well, I think that optimism is well warranted, but let's not slam dunk him into the Hall of Fame just yet, okay? I mean, this young man doesn't know what's going to hit him. I think the difference, too, when you go back and you look at quarterbacks that have started in rookie years, let's go back to a great case study in 2008 when Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan took over as starting quarterbacks day one. Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco went in because of injury. They did not plan on starting him, and they actually ended up starting him, went to the playoffs. He had a solid year, not a great year, over 60%, a little better than 1-1 touchdown to interception, not stellar numbers, but showed that he could handle it. The difference being is Baltimore had a great defense. They had an established running game. Dallas doesn't have those things. They may have the running game. Obviously, the offensive line is Ezekiel Elliott could be a huge plus for them, but that defense has to be a concern. I think more is going to be asked of Dak Prescott than was asked of Joe Flacco, than even was asked of a Matt Ryan back then. And when you look last year with Mariota and Jameis Winston, who had solid rookie years that indicate they're going to be good, solid pros, I don't think as much was asked of them as is going to be asked of Dak Prescott, because that defense is suspect.
You just brought up Mariota, and I was going to ask you about Tennessee and the idea that they want to run what they're calling exotic smash mouth when it comes to their offensive attack this year. The Titans are in a tough division, and yet I feel like they're making steps in the right direction. What are you expecting out of Tennessee and out of a second year of Mariota?
Well, I like Marcus Mariota. I think he and Jameis Winston showed that they can play in this league. Obviously, they've got to take the next step. That description of their offense fits Michael Larkin. He goes back to his Pittsburgh Steelers day. He ultimately wants to be a smash-mouth running program. But obviously, when you have Marcus Mariota and some of the things he does, they're going to open it up a little bit. It really is all about Marcus Mariota and how much better he's going to fit. Yet, remember, they made the transformation to Mike Mularkey as the head coach because he was the offensive coordinator to develop Marcus Mariota. This happened to him in Jacksonville when he took over as the head coach to obviously expand on the resume of Blaine Gabbert, and it didn't happen. So, this is going to be a similar scenario. Tennessee and even Mike Mularkey, their fate's going to be tied to how much improvement, obviously, Marcus Mariota makes.
We're going around the NFL with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us each week by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, when you look at the Carolina Panthers, we know, first of all, it's always difficult to get back to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, regardless of whether you win or lose. But how much of their success last year, going 15-1, can they duplicate this year?
Well, that's a tall task to think that you're going to go 15-1. But this is clearly, in my opinion, the best team in the NFC South. This could be one of the top two teams, maybe the top team, even personnel-wise, in the NFC. There's no reason to think that they can't get back there. Cam Newton, there's no reason to think that he's not going to turn around and again have an MVP year. He's got the credentials. They're going to stay committed to the running game if they can stay healthy. To get Kelvin Benjamin back should be a huge plus. And the defense, the front seven in particular. Now, the secondary has gone through some change. And so those that want to look at Carolina and say, gee, what's going to happen with Carolina this year? Are they going to have that Super Bowl losing jinx and not even get back to the playoffs? If they do have some difficulties, it's likely going to be in the secondary. They drafted their second-round pick. James Bradbury is going to start for them. They had enough losses in the secondary compared to last year's team that's an area you're going to have to watch.
One of the teams that could threaten them in the NFC is Arizona. Obviously, health matters for all 32 teams, but when you have an older quarterback like a Carson Palmer, when you have Larry Fitzgerald, you obviously need them out on the field. But do you feel like Arizona is the best threat to the Panthers in the NFC?
Absolutely. They're a veteran team, and that staying healthy is true of every team. How good is Carolina going to be if they lose to Cam Newton? So you don't wish that on anybody. And so this is going to be a good football team. It's a veteran team. I know the preseason wasn't particularly dynamic, but nobody cares. You remember the Indianapolis Colts days and their heyday with Peyton Manning. They typically went 0-4. The preseason was just not going to be important. So, I mean, it's important, don't get me wrong, but the final outcome, nobody really cares. Nobody pays attention to. I think Arizona has all the pieces in place. Yes, you got to keep Carson Palmer healthy. Can they indeed build on what was a record year for him? But most of all, I really like what they're doing in the running game. Bruce Arians, let's go back again to your Pittsburgh roots, much like the Mike Blark. He wants to run the ball, even though you got Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd. They want to run the ball. If David Johnson stays healthy, this guy's pretty good now. I know Bill Belichick is saying, well, he's no Marshall Faulk. Okay, but he's not bad. This David Johnson's pretty good. They want to run the ball well. And if they can continue to build on that aspect of it, they're going to be right where they were last year.
You talk about how difficult it is to get back to the Super Bowl, win or lose, and Denver's going to try to do it with a seventh-round pick starting at quarterback. How exactly do they do the fans have confidence in the idea of trying to get back to the Super Bowl with such an unproven quarterback?
Well, you're still in the glow of the Super Bowl championship. They're going to raise that banner, and so, yeah, confidence is going to be high, and it should be. You're going to play great defense. Typically, you look at this, and you'd say, okay, they made the determination. We're going to play great defense. We're going to run the ball, and all our quarterback has to do is not throw 23 interceptions like our quarterbacks did last year. Now, I think there's a little bit more to that. The biggest part of that equation to me is, are they going to run the ball then? Because they desperately need to. We'll find out about Trevor Siemian. I think he's a placeholder for Paxton Lynch. Trevor Siemian, I think, could be a solid backup in this league. I followed him in his college career, which you see in the preseason. I don't see those qualities necessary to say this is going to be a frontline championship caliber quarterback. I certainly could be wrong, And I think Dak Prescott, I think when that went out and drafted Dak Prescott and they let Brock Osweiler leave, that was your ultimate plan.
Last one for you, Coach. As you look at the Patriots, obviously they'll have the first 4 weeks without Tom Brady. They have a schedule that looks like, even with Garoppolo if, as a game manager, if he doesn't make mistakes, that 2-2 is pretty easy, maybe even 3-1. What are your expectations for the Patriots while they wait for Brady to come back?
Well, there's any number of reasons. With a better New York Jet team, with what looks to be an improving Miami Dolphins team, I think a Buffalo Bill team that could really explode onto the scene. But I've been burnt on this one too many times. I'm not picking against Bill Belichick. I usually say I'm not picking against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. The fact that they still have they're still going to have 12 games when we're done to deal with whatever happens in the next couple of weeks. The strength for the New England Patriots, beyond the fact that they're the New England Patriots, is you keep talking about, okay, do you have to whittle down the game plan or do you have to change the game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo? Well, that's what they do, more so than any team in the league. They morph from 1 week to the next to whatever they have to be. They're the only team in the league that will literally throw the ball 50 times 1 week and run the ball 40 times the next. So they're obviously going, they're not just at the quarterback position, but the team is used to changing its dynamics in terms of what it wants to do from week to week. Clearly, that'll be the task for them with Garoppolo, you know, see what kind of control he has of the offense, play good defense. The schedule right now looks like, we don't know how these teams are really going to play out, but right now it looks pretty manageable. So I think they're going to be in good shape.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's a part of our Around the NFL here on the NFL Files podcast every single week. It's brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you download the SeatGeek app. You're looking for concert tickets, sporting events, a great way for you to make sure you're paying the best possible price for the tickets that you buy. It's SeatGeek. Coach, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
All right, sounds good.
We're going into overtime next with Chad Brown, former NFL linebacker. Stick around.
Overtime.
This week on Overtime, it is 15-year NFL vet Chad Brown spent time with the Steelers, with the Patriots, as well as the Seahawks. And so Chad joins us here on the NFL Files podcast. And Chad, a six-pack of questions for you. And we start here. Question number one, what's the worst part of the opening week as a player?
That your conditioning isn't at as high of a level as it will be later in the season, and you never really get your second wind during the course of the ball game.
So you're maybe not quite where you want to be, and so you start feeling it late in the game?
You know, you feel it early. Late in the season, you know, you go out there and you play, and somewhere, you know, halfway through the second quarter, you're breathing relaxed, and you kind of get that second wind kind of feeling. The first week or two of the season, you are out there struggling. You've play the full preseason, you've done all the conditioning, it's just your body is just not ready for a full 60 minutes of NFL high-level regular season football.
Nice. All right, question number two in our six-pack. You spent some time here during training camp with Tennessee. What was that like?
It was an incredible experience, and to contrast that where I was last year I did an internship with the Seattle Seahawks, obviously one of the best teams, one of the best franchises in the NFL, versus this year with the Tennessee Titans coming off a 3-13 season, them really trying to build something. I think they will be able to build something good there, but a very different experience. One team that's already there, one team that's trying to be there. And then also maybe the best part of the entire experience was getting a chance to essentially shadow Dick LeBeau for an entire month. Dick LeBeau will be in his 58th year in the NFL this season. So to shadow a guy like that with that much NFL experience was literally a priceless experience. And as good of a coach as Dick LeBeau is, he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. He's an even better human being and a better person. I really enjoyed that experience and that time with him.
As you sit right now, Chad, removed from the game, what's the one thing you would go back and tell your NFL rookie self right now if you could do it?
Don't ride the highs and the lows. It's each season is a marathon, and if you are constantly riding the highs and the lows, you're going to wear yourself out emotionally. There's only so much emotion in the human body that you can tap into that reservoir during the course of the season. And to try to be as steady as you can during the course of the week and after the game and while you're watching film is going to allow you to keep as much as you have in the reserve for the game time when you actually need it. Young Chad, you know, always left the game either extremely happy or extremely sad. And come to find out when you watch the film on Monday, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was, nor was it as good as you thought it was. So just try to be steady Eddie, keep your emotions in check so you can tap into them when you actually need them on Sunday for those 3 hours.
Question number, let's see here. I'm on four here now for Chad Brown. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94, part of overtime here. Chad, your favorite quarterback that you ever got to sack, your favorite quarterback to hit?
Man, you know, I've been lucky enough to hit a lot of them. sacked Peyton Manning, strip sacked Peyton Manning, sacked Joe Montana. So that's probably the, you know, most iconic of the quarterbacks who I sacked. But, you know, if there's was a quarterback who's played, you know, in the 15 years I was in the NFL, there's a strong chance I got to sack him. You know, if I were to choose just one, I probably would go with Joe Montana just because I consider him to be the greatest quarterback of all time. So what better prize than to get the greatest of all time?
Question number five, Chad, would you trade your college national championship at Colorado back in 1990 for a Super Bowl ring? It's a tough one, isn't it?
No, it's a very tough question, but I'll give the answer no. The NFL, while winning a Super Bowl, which I've never won, I'm sure is an amazing experience. To do the national championship in college is different just because NFL, you're a professional, and in college, you're an amateur. And so for a college athlete, you win that championship with guys who you spend all your time with. These are literally your brothers. It's not just your teammates like it is in the NFL. These are literally your brothers. My roommate was on the football team. I spent all my time with those guys. You know, so because of that bonding experience, because of who we are, even now later in life, you know, I will be at those guys' funerals. You know, I'll be there when their, you know, children or grandchildren are born. Because of those types of relationships, I think that makes the national championship in college sweeter than a Super Bowl championship would be.
Last one for you, Chad, in our six-pack of questions. Do you have a pick for who's going to win the Super Bowl this year?
You know, I do not. You know, I don't get into that. It's always fascinating to me whether we're talking college football or pro football. You know, the folks who do that, and I respect those who give it a shot. There's just so much football to be played. So many wacky things can happen. You know, the Broncos won the Super Bowl last year, you know, with one of the worst offenses in Super Bowl winning history. There were points late in the season where it looked as if they might not even win their division. So, you know, so many things have to happen for it all to line up. So my guess would literally just be an absolute guess. You know what? But just for the sake of doing this, I'll go with the Seahawks on the NFC side, and I'll go with the Steelers on the AFC.
Very nice. There he is, Chad Brown. He's our guest for overtime this week on the NFL Files. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94. Make sure you give him a follow. Chad, thanks.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.